At 5:20 in the morning on Saturday, October 7th, Michael Levy's younger brother, Orr, slipped out of his in-law's home with his wife, Einav. Their 2-year-old son, Almog, was asleep, having spent a lovely Friday evening with his mom and dad. No one would have imagined that this would be the last time they would all be together. Orr and Einav were excited to go to the Nova Music and Dance Festival for a special, carefree day, while Almog was with his grandparents. An hour after they set out, as Michael describes it in the interview, Orr and Einav arrived in hell. Since that horrific day, Michael's life has been devoted to bringing home his brother and all the hostages. He travels and speaks tirelessly to raise awareness of this nightmare in which he and his family find themselves. All travel and meetings are arranged by the Hostage Family Forum, a grassroots group that was formed on Saturday, October 7th, just as the scope of the crisis began to clarify. And it has grown into an incredible organization, providing full support in every way imaginable to the family members of hostages. I met with Michael Levy on Monday and was in awe of his love, passion, and unflagging determination. This is the most important mission of his life. He talks about his little brother, as he calls him. What a special person he is. He talks about that day, October 7th, and the blur his life has become. A never-ending October 7th. He takes us into the heart of a family that is destroyed a little more each day, and yet maintains faith that Orr will come home. Orr will come home. Michael shares with us the challenges of being present for his own school-age children. There is no guidebook for how to manage such a traumatic set of circumstances when monsters murder and rampage and take civilians hostage. The scope of the horror is something that Michael struggles to process to this day, as do we all. And he implores the world, everyone, to understand that the savagery of October 7th, it will not end in Israel. This is the beginning. I'm Vivian Berkovich, former Canadian ambassador to Israel, and now living in the beautiful state of Tel Aviv. Stay with us. Good morning, Michael Levy.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for making the time to speak to State of Tel Aviv and for agreeing to speak about such a difficult subject. But I know it's something that you're driven to do.
Thank you. I think it's important to share the story wherever I can. So I appreciate the time here.
Your brother is a Hamas hostage.
Yes.
I really am deeply sorry to put you through this and to be asking you to go over this painful territory. But I think that we both understand how important this is.
I 100% agree with you. And for me, it's actually like my therapy when I do it over and over again. And I totally get the importance of it. And I know why I do it. And this is why I'm going to keep doing it.
I think that really immediate testimonials are so important for the moment and also for history. And as I mentioned before we turned on the microphones, that as the daughter of a survivor, I do understand in my kishkas, as we say, in my bones, the importance of the moment historically. And I also believe strongly that we have to record this now, not wait 20, 30, 40, 50 years. We have to do it now. If we've learned one thing from the Shoah, from the Holocaust, let it be that, the importance of immediate testimony. So let's go back, Michael, to that horrible day, the morning of October 7th. Take us from the beginning. How did you find out? What did you find out?
So I was actually at home with my family. I woke up, I still remember the exact time. I woke up at 6:34 a.m. from the sound of the sirens.
And where do you live in Israel?
I live in Ganei Tikva. It's not very far from Tel Aviv. I woke up. At first, I thought I was dreaming because there were sirens all over the place. And I turned on the TV, actually woke my wife up and asked her if she hears the sirens. And then we turned on the TV and saw all the alerts on the screen. I immediately called my mother and asked her if they are okay. She said that they are okay, but she also told me that Or and Einav went to a music festival down south. Or was my little brother, and Einav was his wife. They left their 2-year-old son, Almog, with his grandparents and wanted to enjoy
a night out.
And day out, actually. Yeah, they actually wanted to spend another night with Almog before they headed to the party. And then they left Einav's parents' house at 5:20 a.m.
Wow.
And got there at 6:20 a.m. So straight to hell.
It's just surreal. And your brother Or and his now deceased wife, Einav, how old were they at the time?
Or is 33. Einav was 32 years old. A young, happy couple, like the new Israeli dream, both very successful. Or is a genius computer engineer.
Like everyone in Israel.
Like everyone in Israel, but Or is actually a genius. I remember us growing up as kids and how annoying it was for me to see my little brother. So the things there came so easily for him when I had to fight for everything.
What's the age difference between the two of you?
8 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there anyone in between?
Yeah, we have Tal in between us. He's 35.
Is he a genius?
He is very smart, but always the genius of the family.
I'm the fourth of four. It just gets better.
I guess that's the situation. Or actually taught himself everything.
Wow.
He even taught himself to program. As one of his colleagues told my dad when he met him, he said that Or is the best engineer, computer engineer he's ever met. And when my dad told him that Or didn't study and he's not an actual engineer, he just repeated it and told him again that he's still the best engineer that he's met. That's the story.
Or's the real deal.
Or is the real deal. And Einav also was also very successful. She was a UI UX designer in a very big international company, very successful.
So this lovely young couple leaves their 2-year-old son with his grandparents, Einav's parents, and they head off in the middle of the night to this festival, which I've never been to one of these desert raves, but I hear they're just fantastic. And then what?
And then when they get there, they've parked and just the missile attack and heard the sirens. And they immediately texted us and told us that they are heading back. But we now know that tried to head back, but they couldn't. So they just ran away into a bomb shelter not very far from the music festival area. They hid there and then thought they were safe for a few minutes.
Do you know if they were alone in the shelter? Were there others with
them?
No.
Part of the things I did in order to understand what happened was to find any kind of information about them. So I managed to find videos of them inside the bomb shelter, pictures of them inside the bomb shelter. I spoke to families that their loved ones ran into the same bomb shelter. There were actually 29 people inside of it.
Wow.
And you cannot really understand how small those bomb shelters are until you actually stand inside.
I've been to the Otef Aza, the area that was attacked, and I've been in the shelters, and I know. So for our listeners, gosh, there may be 1.5 meters by 2 or 3, depending.
Yeah, I was inside with 4 other people, and I felt that I couldn't breathe.
Exactly. Americans, what is it? 1 meter is about 3 feet. Okay. So it's small. It's a very small enclosed space. It's concrete. There's very little air and there's no light. Where do you know you do know where the shelter is that your brother and sister-in-law were?
Yes, it's actually the one that everyone knows, the bomb shelter of Aner Shapira next to Kibbutz Re'im.
He's a real hero.
He is a real hero. When the terrorists arrived to this bomb shelter, he actually threw out 8 out of the 9 grenades that the terrorists threw inside the bomb shelter. He saved my brother and 10 other people. 4 of them were kidnapped and 7 others were somehow survived.
Oh, I didn't know that 7 people from that bomb shelter survived.
Yes, 7 survivors and 4 hostages. 18 were murdered, including Einav. And honestly, when I saw the bullet holes on the wall and saw what the grenades did to the bomb shelter, I still can't believe that someone managed to survive it.
I can't either. So your brother then knows his wife has been murdered?
Yes, I think that's the hardest part for me, knowing that Einav was his soulmate and they were together until the last second. I actually have a video of them and spoke to some of the survivors and they all told me the same story, that Oren and Einav were very close and just...
like embracing.
Yeah, and all they talked about was that was the fact that they don't want the family to worry too much. And then it happened. I guess the last thing that Or saw before he was abducted was his wife being murdered in front of his eyes.
Somehow, Or remains alive. He leaves the shelter, and there are the Hamas thugs.
They're called the monsters, but yeah.
They're waiting, and I've seen some of the footage. I've seen the footage, of course, of Hirsch Goldberg Polin. Basically,
so
being thrown into a truck.
Hirsch was kidnapped together with Or. We actually...
were they in that same truck? Do you know?
Now I know it now, but Or was missing for 8 days. We managed to find what happened to 28 out of the 29 people that were inside. And we didn't know anything about Or until the army told us that he was abducted. So he wasn't in any of the... videos that showed Hamas kidnapping the others. There were also Alon Oel and Elia Cohen with them.
So this is 8 days. For 8 days after October 7th, you and your family had no idea where Or was.
Yes. We found out about Einav on Wednesday, so 4 days after.
Right.
And the funeral was on Thursday, one of the hardest days of my life. If you combine it with the toughest 8 days of my life, it wasn't a very good week, to say the least. Honestly, I don't think I didn't actually stop to grieve about Einav. I just didn't have the time. And this part is still open.
Fresh.
Yeah, it is.
I think many of us are still with you, the family members. We're stuck on October 7th, obviously not having a loved one in this horrific situation. I wouldn't dare compare my emotion or engagement, but we're with you. And
we feel it. And it actually helps. As you said, for me, those almost 5 months now feels like very long and very bad day.
Time stopped for so many people.
Time definitely stopped. And most days, I don't even know what day it is.
Okay, so 8 days after October 7th, the family learns that Or is being held hostage by Hamas. Can you tell us how you found out?
Yeah, I got a phone call it was Sunday morning. I got a phone call from an army officer that I didn't know back then. She presented herself and told me that she tried to reach my parents and they didn't answer. I asked her why, and she said that she wanted to schedule time to meet them. But I immediately asked her, okay, what happened? She didn't want to tell me at first, not over the phone, but I insisted. And she finally told me that I was abducted. I asked her to wait, and I asked her to find a paramedic and a doctor and before we go to my parents. And I also asked her to wait until I get there because I want to be the one that actually tells them what happened. And my parents live about 25 minutes drive from my house. I think it took me, I don't really remember the way there, but I think it took me like 15 minutes to get there. And when I got there, I tried to talk to my parents when they are both in the same room. Unfortunately, they weren't. And when I tried to call my mother to come outside to the living room where my father was, she immediately saw that I know something. And she asked me, and I told her that all was kidnapped. And to my relief, she was actually relieved, like I was. I know it's crazy to, you know, I still feel guilty for that feeling. But the other option was that the worst thing happened. So that's the best thing that could happen for us.
The best then. Outcome on a kind of continuum of horrible outcomes. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think that unfortunately, no matter what would have happened in this kind of situation, you're going to feel guilty.
Yeah, that's the feeling since October 7th. Every time I wake up, if I manage to get some sleep, or every time I eat, or every time I take a shower, or do anything
normal
counts as normal human being.
So your family receives the shock. I assume both your mom and your dad are somewhat relieved at least to know that Or is alive.
Yeah.
Almog, who's 2 years old, their son, is there. How do you and your family members deal with a two-year-old?
It took us a while. We wanted to talk to a professional first. How can you explain a two-year-old boy that his mom won't come back? And how can you explain that his father is held somewhere in the tunnels of Gaza by monsters? I still can't get it. A two-year-old can't understand it. So we did what we thought, and we just hugged him and showed him love and support and tried to make him happy. And then after we spoke to psychologists, they told us that we have to tell him that his mom won't come back and that his father is somewhere missing and that we are looking for him.
How has this little boy responded?
He misses them. He called them almost every day.
Still, five months later.
Still. Although there are moments where we are actually afraid that he'll forget about them. We know that when we mention the words dad or mom next to him, he bursts into tears. So we try to avoid it. But at the same time, in order for him to remember, we need to talk about them. And my biggest fear is that he'll forget about all and about Einav. But it is what it is. We just try to show him love and keep him happy and raise him until all comes back.
Is he living with you and your family?
He's currently moving between the grandparents.
Okay. But he has a bit of a tribe, I'm assuming, between you
yes.
and other brother and other kids and...
Yeah, my daughter is, he's like, he's their young brother.
Okay. And that has to be so important. Not that anything can replace his mom and dad, of course, but still to have a lot of love around him.
Yeah, it is. Actually, one of the happiest moments since October 7th was at my birthday. I actually ran into... I didn't want to be here in Israel and celebrate, so I went on a delegation. And he actually called me on a video call and sang Happy Birthday.
Nice. Beautiful.
An amazing feeling.
And what birthday was it for you? How old did you turn?
I was 41.
I'll say mazal tov, and I hope
thank
that
you.
Your brother is home soon to celebrate with you as well.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for that. And as you said, we spoke about the guilt.
Yes.
And every time I go on those delegations, my first delegation was actually the toughest because it was in New York, one of the...
Right.
Manhattan is arguably one of the most beautiful cities in the world. And I remember waking up every morning after two or three hours of sleep. And eventually I just got out of the hotel at 5 a.m. just to walk on the streets. And I felt guilty that I'm there walking in one of the greatest cities in the world when my brother is held by those monsters.
Are you concerned with what is going on in Israel? This is not just another crisis. State of Tel Aviv is committed to delivering superb and candid analysis, and we're offering a limited-time subscription special, a 33% discount from the regular fee of $90 annually. 1 year for only $60. Stay informed and stay connected with State of Tel Aviv. We are a reader-supported enterprise. If you value our work, please subscribe. It makes a huge difference. stateoftelaviv.com. All one word. Now, back to the podcast.
I want to know if, over the last 5 months, you've received any concrete information from any hostages who have been released or officials about your brother and what his condition is. Was he injured? How's he holding up? All the stuff that I'm sure you work desperately to find.
Unfortunately, the only information we have is that he was kidnapped alive and that he wasn't injured. And we have no reason to believe anything different. So we hold on to this information. And as you said, we'll do everything in order to bring him back. I walk 24/7 just to do this.
So no concrete or verifiable sightings? No one who came out said, yeah, I saw him?
Unfortunately not.
Wow.
It was the same with the other people that he was kidnapped with. So I guess they are hiding them somewhere.
That they have them all together, a truckload of men.
Yeah.
Do you know if it was all men, or were there some women who survived and were taken as well?
With them, it was they were four men. All Leah Cohen, Hirsch, and Alon Oel.
Working out from the immediate kind of nuclear family and broadening it to your world, your friends, the kids, the cousins. How are people responding? How are you finding being in this world?
First, I want to start with the family. I think that's the real story that people don't really get. The fact that each hostage has hundreds of family members, friends, who left everything and are dealing with it on a daily basis, hour after hour. And we were also, in a way, abducted. My life were completely different. There are moments where I look at myself in the mirror and I don't really recognize myself. And that's something that we'll have to deal with after they are back. But to answer your question, the support that we get from family, friends, and even people that we don't know is amazing. I think that's one of the best thing that came out of this horrible situation. Just seeing how good people are and seeing people that left everything and are doing everything in order to help us or in order to make us feel somehow a bit better.
The community that's developed around the families to try to protect and support is beautiful and moving. How many children do you have?
I have three girls.
And how old are your daughters?
The oldest is 9, and I also have 6-year-old twins.
Oy, okay.
Amazing.
That must be fun.
They are amazing.
I always wanted to be a twin.
Yeah, me too. No, they are not identical.
And so with your own daughters who are school age, they're old enough, you can't insulate them from what's going on outside, of course, because they will hear it and see it everywhere. For people who have not been to Israel in the last few months, you cannot escape the hostage issue. Everywhere you look, there are posters and reminders, and they're going to school, and I'm sure that it's discussed there. So can you tell us or share with us a bit about how you're helping your kids through this?
Yeah.
And I'd imagine it's different for the 9-year-old than for the 6-year-olds.
Not so much, okay. Because I think it was after a day on October 8th, my wife and I understood that we cannot hide it. And we told them. We told them that Or and Einav went to a music festival, and we told them that something very bad happened, and we told them that they were missing. And then we had to tell them that Einav was murdered and that Or was kidnapped. Decided early on that we are not going to hide the facts. Obviously, we won't tell them the whole story. And it took us a while to understand how it affects them, how much they actually know and how much they actually understand. Just after seeing one of the twins, she just stopped eating. She stopped going to school. She didn't want to go to friends. She was scared that something like this will happen to her parents. And now we now know that they know everything. They can actually tell the story themselves the same way I tell it. That's just, I cannot even start to describe the feeling. You see your 6-year-old twins talk about how did they find Einav and how did she look like when they found her, and thinking who will raise Almog if Or won't come back. That's crazy. That's horrible. And actually one of the things we have to deal with.
Absolutely.
They have to deal with. They are all treated, obviously, but it will take them years to recover.
It's just going to be a part of who they are now.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
I didn't want them to be part of it.
Of course not.
As you can imagine. That's actually one of the things that I try to show people outside of Israel. Most people don't really understand what it means to live in Israel. Even before October 7th, my 9-year-old daughter, it's her 6th time experiencing missile attack. And we live in central Israel. We are not close to any border.
We're all close to borders.
That's the thing. I'm used to it.
Yeah.
And at first, when I saw that missile attack on October 7th, early on October 7th, I thought to myself, okay, just another missile attack.
Right.
But that thought is actually crazy. No country in the world should live like this.
Couldn't agree more. We're now coming up to tomorrow, day 150 of these people being held in these medieval dungeons in Gaza. And I know we don't want to be political, so you can answer this however you choose. I think it's really important for us to ask the question, and we would ask it of any government, why 5 months later, there are still 134 hostages in captivity in Gaza?
Honestly, I don't have a very good answer. All I know is that the fact that they are still there means that we are all not doing enough. Not me personally, not the media, and not the government, the Israeli government, not foreign governments. Everyone should do more in order to bring them back. This impossible situation that Hamas is holding 134 innocent hostages. They didn't do anything wrong. And every second that they are still there means that Hamas is still committing crimes against humanity. And the fact that the world is not doing enough to bring them back means that we all need to wake up. We all need to keep the pressure and put more pressure on everyone, on the media, on our government, on the American government, and in fact, on any government in the world, to make them release them.
Are you hopeful?
I think I'm more than hopeful. I know he'll be back, and it's just a matter of time. And that's what keeps me going.
And your family, your parents, remain hopeful?
We are all very optimistic.
That's yes. Good.
And we obviously have our moments, like everyone else. But I cannot even explain it. I just know he'll be back. And as I promised my parents on the second day, I'll bring him back. I don't know how. I don't know what I'll have to do. But even if it means that I'll have to turn the world upside down, I'll bring him back and we'll bring the rest of the hostages back.
Have you attended any of the meetings that the Hostage Family Forum has arranged with Prime Minister Netanyahu?
I've met almost everyone. So yes, to tell you that I know which of those meetings will help us and which aren't. I can't. I just know that I have to keep going. And I think that every time I tell the story is important, even if it's just someone out on the street, because you can never know who might be able to help.
Absolutely. And I know that today, after we finish our conversation here, that you're heading to Jerusalem to meet this afternoon with a senior EU, European Union official. Who are you meeting with today?
He's actually the head of the Subcommittee for Human Rights.
At the EU in Brussels.
At the EU, yeah. For me, it's just another meeting, just another step on the way to bring them back.
And is this what you do? Have you been working at all since October 7th?
No, that's what I do ever since October 7th. This is my job now. My most important and toughest job I've ever had and I'll probably have.
It's a big job.
Yes.
I know that you recently were in North America and you were in my hometown, Toronto. Toronto's a very inhospitable city these days for Jewish people, notwithstanding the fact that there are close to 250,000 Jews living in Toronto and in the suburbs around it. Can you tell me, because I do have a lot of Canadian listeners, what was your experience in Toronto? Was there anything memorable about it, or was it kind of part of the whole blur of when you go out on the road and do interview after interview and meet group after group?
Part of it was a blur. It was my sixth delegation, I think, and I had another one a week after, and I'm heading to two more this week. And in most days, I don't even know in which country I'm at.
Where are you going this week?
London and then the US. But there were few moments where I felt that it might change things. A lot of media coverage, a lot of important meetings with members of the parliament, meeting with Christian College, and also in a Hindu temple. So I believe that we need to share this story even in places where they don't really like us. I think those places are even more important because we need to convince people that don't really understand that this is not political, that we are talking about human beings.
Right.
And my brother is just a normal guy and the rest of the hostages are normal people.
Did you, on any of your trips, have you been confronted with some of the nastier stuff that's out there?
Yes, a few times. I actually saw someone ripping posters out of the wall in the middle of Manhattan when I was there. I saw demonstrations. I saw people supporting whatever happens in Gaza without really understanding what they are supporting and what they are cheering about. For me, I feel bad for them. I am not even angry because those people are ignorant. They don't understand that they are cheering for monsters who will kill them if they have a chance.
Exactly.
Hamas didn't murder just Jewish people. They murdered Christians and Muslims and Hindus and everyone that they managed to kill.
They slaughtered Thai workers. They slaughtered a Tanzanian agricultural student. They slaughtered animals.
Yeah.
So this is, you're a nicer person than me because I don't actually feel sorry for them. I feel rage towards them. I think that to have the privilege of living in a free society, you also have a responsibility. And the responsibility is to use your brain and find out what it is you're supporting. It's a pretty low bar. And they're not just allowing themselves to be manipulated. They're hurting so many people. And as you said, it is going to blow back on them. And it's going to blow back soon. And so many of these so-called progressive left who are allying with the Islamists in the West.
It's already happening.
I know you have to get going to make it to Jerusalem in time for your meeting soon, Michael. And I just want to wrap up with a few closing questions. You've done a lot of traveling. You've met with so many in the media, important officials, influential people, regular people. Is there any particular country or media that stands out as having been particularly supportive, helpful, empathic on your journey?
I think that I felt supported by few media and newspapers over the world. Specifically, some of them were in Portugal. My family is actually related to Portugal, and this is why I visited Portugal twice.
Oh, okay.
And met the president, met the foreign minister. They are very supportive. They are very understanding. They want to help, and they are trying their best to do it. And I think there should be more countries that actually do something, because as you said earlier, it will backfire on them if not.
It's quite extraordinary that you mentioned Portugal, because I've noticed, and this also happened during World War II, that there were these little countries, these small countries that you wouldn't expect, that showed the moral fortitude to stand up and be counted and do the right thing. And of course, I'm thinking of Denmark. I'm thinking of a very much lesser known country that was extraordinarily good to its small Jewish population in World War II, and that's Albania.
And also Bulgaria.
Bulgaria, yeah. Exactly. And it's very encouraging and heartening to hear what you have to say about Portugal, which is one on a list of countries that have stepped up. But what's discouraging, on the other hand, of course, are the larger, more influential countries that tend to try to equivocate. And on the one hand, on the other hand. But I like the good story. So thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you. Just to add on that, I think that most people, most countries or most country officials that I've met from all over the world, including countries that are not very vocal on their support, and sometimes they're actually not very supportive on the media, they all feel the same. They all support us. Sometimes they are afraid to show it. Sometimes they have their own agendas. Government officials and people, most people actually understand what's right. And I think the goal here needs to be them taking action and being more vocal.
We all need to stand up, use our voices, and be strong, and show moral clarity and fortitude. It's the least we can do when people like you are working through this horrific scenario and agony, personal agony, to try to bring attention to this. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Michael, before we finish?
Just one thing. I touched it earlier, but I want to stress it again. I want people to understand that although it's very easy to take this to politics, this is not about politics. It's about real human beings with families and hopes and dreams. They were kidnapped from their houses. They were kidnapped from music festivals. My brother and his wife only crime was that they wanted to celebrate peace and love in a music festival. And they were brutally attacked by monsters who will slaughter everything in their way in order to ruin everything, including people in the US and in Canada and everywhere else. And just remember that those people, those hostages, are real people with families who work 24/7 to bring them back. And they have kids and parents and wives, and we need them back.
Thank you so much for being so open and honest and sharing your pain and your story. And I look forward, Michael, to meeting your brother after he's come home and had some time to rest up.
It will happen. I know. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael Levy, for fighting for your brother and all the hostages every moment of every day and night. Your dignity and love inspire us all. And I so look forward to the day when you share with us the joy of the return of your little brother, Or. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the State of Tel Aviv and Beyond podcast. We'll keep the dispatches coming as frequently as we can. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment, rate us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. You can check out our full library of articles and podcasts at our website, stateoftelaviv.com. State of Tel Aviv is an independent media venture, and we rely on subscribers to support our work. If you are not yet a paying subscriber, please consider taking the plunge today. Each person really does make a huge difference. Especially in these very challenging times in Israel, it is important that you stay informed and current and seek out a range of perspectives. This is a pivotal moment in Israeli history. It is not a time to be passive and disengaged. Thanks for sticking with me to the end. I'm Vivian Berkovich, signing off from deep inside the state of Tel Aviv.